I'm Akron, Ohio. This is episode 188 of On the Tropes. On this week's episode, we are going to talk about things that get better with age, like a fine wine or
cheese,
or the 25 things that are on our lists, apparently.
George Clooney.
Keanu Reeves.
Yeah. Keanu Reeves, yeah. Yeah. Anyways, I'm your host, Nick. And today I'm joined by
Sir,
Eva,
Femo,
and Kyle.
Kyle, this was your.
A rare idea.
Brainchild. What made you want to talk about this?
I was listening to this podcast and they were talking about
another podcast.
Yeah. Not. Oof. Yeah. Oof. They're talking about the game Days Gone and how when that game first came out, it didn't really get good reviews, but it's selling really well. And they were talking about how it's the kind of game where while you're playing it, it's fine. It has issues. But the longer, like, after you're done playing it, if you're able to finish it, your memory of those issues fades away, and all is left is like a good, solid experience that gets better.
That's how I describe having read Walden by Thoreau.
But
he talks a lot about his shopping lists, but, you know, 20 years later, I'm pretty glad I read it.
But the guy who was talking about it, he's more familiar with movies, and he knows that it's very common with movies, but not quite as common with video games. So they had a little discussion of games that do this. So,
nice. So what do you guys think that certain things age better, either to you or to the, you know, zeitgeist?
For me, I think as I change and have a deeper knowledge of certain things and understanding and appreciation of other things, then you can kind of appreciate something, even if you already appreciated it before, appreciate it in a different way. Mm-hmm. And the complexities kind of come through. It's like you're developing a palette almost, and now you're noticing these other notes that before had been lost to you.
I think, too, like with whether it's actors or people or artists, sometimes the person does develop over time too. Like, you know, there are some directors that I like their latter work a lot more. And so I wonder if that, you know, if we talk about somebody's talent or skill, sometimes that can get better.
Yeah. The other thing, there are certain genres I think that become more clear as to their actual quality after a few viewings, like horror movies. You spend the first time watching, like just being scared or anticipating things, and it's not till rewatching or things with a mystery to it, things that you're trying to solve while it's going on. The first time you watch it, you're just trying to figure out that puzzle or anticipate the scares or things like that. And then it's not until you know what's going on that you can maybe appreciate or more accurately criticize, you know, acting style or the storytelling technique or the visuals or things like that, that maybe you're just letting wash over you the first time, but you're not paying that much actual attention to. Like, it wasn't until the third or fourth time I saw The Shining that I noticed, how good the sound design is, like how creepy all of the sound is in that movie, where the first couple times you see it, it's just like one of the many things that's
sucking you into
that's
the film.
Ruining my night.
Yeah, I definitely didn't pick up on all those interesting things that they talked about and the room, documentary.
Yeah. Yeah. If you pick up on all that the first time you watch it, you're a very smart person.
Just a caveat.
No.
I was going to say with 237, though, I don't think that all those theories are pretty
well. The ones that were obvious, like the room, like the hotel layout just being like completely insane.
Yeah.
Things that were
I think, though, that some of those things, just to get more into 237, I think that some of that you do perceive it on a subconscious level.
Yeah.
Like the thing with the window in the office, you know, like that he goes into what should be an internal office and there's a window looking out of it and it's just wrong.
Yeah.
That
it just makes you feel uncomfortable.
I think somewhere in your body, you're trying to figure out how to get around that hotel and it doesn't make sense. And so you're scared because you don't know how to get out or how to get where you want to go. And it's some of those were just bad ideas.
I had
my feeling about the movie was that they were all somewhat right. and but that together, it's there.
It's a guy on skis. It's a guy on skis.
Maybe the guy on skis is a bit much. However, it's kind of still, it's kind of there.
Isn't there another theory where like they play the movie forwards and backwards at the
simultaneously?
Same time, and they're like, yeah, that was another like.
I think the sexual abuse part is a bit much also.
I don't remember that theory.
Yeah, there's one about that, like, he has been sexually abusing Danny mm-hmm. also.
Oh.
And I, yeah.
Well, that one, to me, has a... If it is a true theory, there's some other troubling elements to it. Yeah. Because there's another thing that I didn't notice until, like, a very recent viewing of The Shining, that Jack Nicholson, when he's sitting in the lobby waiting for, like, that interview... He's reading a Playgirl magazine. Yep.
Not just any Playgirl.
I think they talk about that in 237.
There's something about, I can't remember off the top of my head, but there's one of the articles in that magazine is about something that's
there's something
wrong.
Relevant that's bad. I don't remember.
So, you know, there's that whole deviant homosexual trope that mm-hmm. we should definitely get as far away from as possible. It's really harmful. So, like, if that element is there, there might be some also... you know, the deviant homosexual abusing his child kind of thing. So that, I actually feel like that theory might be slightly correct. I don't talk about it a lot because it does call to the point that Kubrick, you know, comes from a time where there were a lot of assholes.
Not him, though. I mean, he was fine.
Yeah, of course, yeah.
He's well known as being a cordial
gentleman.
If I know one thing about Kubrick, it's that he was a nice guy.
That's sarcasm, listeners.
Do these movies and games need to be smart, quote unquote, or like can they
be? No, not necessarily. Because I was going to say the last thing that I have in my notes is that a lot of times comedies get better if they're quotable, even if they're just like
a really good point.
Silly, dumb. But if you can drop a million quotes, basketball.
I think almost it guarantees it. Like
yeah.
We came of age at a time where, like, you know, like at the beginning of the century, where like DVDs were, so we had a huge flux of things that were terrible in theaters, but because we were watching them over and over again at parties or at other people's houses and stuff, they got it like a second life that they didn't have someplace else.
Yeah. Do you guys want to hop into our top fives?
Sure.
Mm-hmm. Kyle, what's your number five?
My number five is just the board game Settlers of Catan, which is weird because I love that game now.
Mm-hmm.
When I first played it, I kind of have a theory, and you're the only person that has sort of bucked the trend. But if you,
I'm the opposite.
If you
but
win,
I have a personal.
Yeah, if you win that game, then you fall in love with it. But which you won the first time you played.
I won the first time I played it. Played never it since. Once. No, I've never won since. Oh, I played like a dozen times. Terrible.
But yeah, it was just a game that I didn't understand when I first played it. And once you get your own style with how to win, because there are several ways to win, then you feel more comfortable playing it, which is probably the case with most board games. Like you're confused immediately, and then you either give it a second chance or you don't. But yeah, definitely got better with age. Demo.
My number five is actually Blade Runner, which starts off as like, wow, this is such a spectacle, and it's so cool. But having seen that movie like time and time again, or you know, over the course of my life, it's you get different things from it, not just philosophically, but also, you know, technologically. How do they actually make this happen where it feels like this fully fledged world? And I guess that's the long and short of it there.
I think I sent you the picture from the
blimp,
the Museum of the Moving Image in New York. They had a miniature of the I don't know if it's the Tyrell Corporation building or just one of the big buildings, and the thing's only like 2 feet tall. But
it's what they used.
I took my phone out, and you take a picture of it, and you just, as long as that's all that's in the frame, it looks like you're looking at a giant building outside. It's
the detail of it.
Yeah, it's awesome. Gorgeous. Yeah, it's a great movie, and that movie does what I think all of my favorite sci-fi movies have done since, is like the what is existence and
asking big questions that, you know, and just the thing that I think I'm still most floored about it is that it just is a living, breathing universe I don't know if I've ever, even with Lord of the Rings and things of that nature, I don't know if I've ever seen anything match it where it feels that lived in and real. I don't know.
And characters that aren't just like one-sided, like they're not just pure evil or pure good, like they have different layers to them.
Right. I mean, it's like a alternate dimension of 1980s New York. Like, I mean, it just feels real to me. I don't know. Eva?
I'm going to say any Wes Anderson movie I've ever seen, the first time I see it, I kind of don't like it. And I'm like, oh, why don't people like this? Like, what? I don't get it. And then if I, like, the more I watch them, the more I kind of, like, settle into them. And I'm like, oh, okay, fine. You know, they're okay.
Such a glowing endorsement.
Yeah. Fine. I mean, like, acceptable. There's a lot of things.
So you go from, like, a 3 to a 6. It's not...
Yeah, that's, well, maybe like sometimes like a 7 or 8.
Okay.
Because, I mean, I like miniature things. I like, you know, there's a lot of little pieces in there that I like, but I never seem to come out like as enthusiastic about them as everybody else does.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I feel the same way about him, that his movies usually take a couple to get, especially the humor in them, I think.
I think it's a hereditary thing for his lineage.
What's his?
You know who his great-granddad is?
No.
Edgar Rice Burroughs.
Huh.
I had no idea.
Mm-hmm.
Weird. Good for them.
Yeah. Sarah, what's your number 5?
So, kind of like playing off that, the first time I saw it, the first time I saw The Big Lebowski, I hated it. I thought, this is like the silliest movie, and like everybody had built it up so much that night that like, it was like one of those kind of like a DVD viewing of, you know, hanging out at somebody's house and like everybody's there. And I'm just like, this is the worst movie. It's so boring. It makes no sense. The dream sequences are ridiculous. Like the actors, like they're not even in the same movie together. And then like I watched it again and just laughed my ass off the whole time. And it was really when it hit that, oh wait, this is a hard-boiled mystery.
Yeah, it's The Big Sleep only.
Like once I realized that, like, oh, this is just a version of like just like a mystery novel and like a noir film, then I from there I've seen it so many times, then I think that's a movie too that I like notice new stuff all the time. So yeah, Big Lebowski.
They're the filmmakers actually that I'm the most Eva's Wes Anderson to me were. Very rarely do I like or love their movies the first time coming out, and then you watch it again and you watch it again. I mean, Inside Llewyn Davis I liked a lot the first time coming out, but now it's like I could talk about the movie for hours.
Yeah, Wes Anderson is, I could say that, yeah. Some of his stuff I still don't like, but the things that I do, I think they're better now than the first time I saw them.
Yeah.
Nick, what's your number 5?
My number 5 is the movie Inception, which is another one of those movies where the first time I saw it, there's like a whole puzzle you need to figure out, and I spent the entire time like trying to keep all the different levels in my head, trying to figure out like the clues as to what this means, and then at the end there's like, spoiler alert, there's a top, and I don't know what happens to it, and you try to like go back and figure out, whoa, what does this mean, and did the top fall? And rewatching that movie, you get to see how amazingly shot it is, and the action is just so fun. The first time I spent too much time trying to figure out what was going on that I didn't just enjoy the ride. And the top thing at the end, kind of like spoilers ish but DiCaprio just walks away from it and he doesn't even look back, and that's what I think is important to take from that movie, not whether or not the top falls, but the fact that he doesn't care. He doesn't care if it falls, so why should we? It's not our top. So that's what I got and appreciated a lot more on a repeat viewing of that movie. The movie's super fun. It's really good. Kyle, what's your number 4?
My number 4 is the game Soma and the movie Open Water, which I don't even really love Open Water still, but I think the fear in that movie kind of like lingered for a very long time afterwards, because it's not, I didn't think it was really scary while you're watching it, but if you think about it and put yourself in their situation, it becomes like a very terrifying thing. And then Soma is the same way, where it's just this really atmospheric game that while you're playing, it's not the most fun game because it's very slow and you're underwater in this base and it's very, you're alone for most of it. And the ending is so chilling that it stays with you longer, than like just playing through the full game. So, yeah, I think Soma is a very underrated game that I don't think people are really playing or talking about.
But is it named after the drug from Brave New World?
I don't know. I don't think so. But it might be. I don't know what it's named after, actually. Or I think Soma might be the ship.
Strokes song? Isn't that the name of a Strokes song?
Is it Dandy Warhol's? No.
I don't know. We'll find out. It's not important at all. But we're going to find out and bring it up minutes from now when...
I can't sing.
When we've all forgotten about it.
I know. Yeah.
That would be your number four.
I just wanted to point out that Open Water is like, I think that movie in 15 years, 10 years is going to be like looked back on as one of the best horror movies that came out easily in a decade.
It was made for like
it's
nothing.
So good.
It was like.
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Just like the drug.
He's giving away the plot to Brave New World, I think, so we're going to turn that off.
Yeah, I think that was one of the first movies where I was like, this is the budget of this movie. Is,
for real?
Yeah, it's insane.
All they needed was a couple cameras and two people to
float around in the
water. To die while we filmed it.
I was thinking of Smashing Pumpkins.
Mm.
They have a song called
They have Soma. Oh, all right. I wonder if it's also...
I think theirs is about the Strokes.
So. What would be your number four?
1984 by George Orwell, which...
Speaking of that era's...
Dystopian literature.
Nice.
I just like the long and short of it is like as you pay attention to the world around you more and more as you get older and you see more and more things, more and more... of this novel seems to stand out, and you realize how I don't want to say prophetic necessarily. I think just how astute this guy was and looking at trends and things that were around him and where he saw things going. Talking about George Orwell. So 1984, brilliant.
Mm-hmm.
Eva, your number four.
Thing that I didn't think that I liked at first. Ingmar Bergman's films.
Oh.
I saw The Seventh Seal in college because a friend of mine had to watch it for a class, and so I just watched it with her. And I was like, gosh, this is dumb. Like, this is just too much and not interesting. And then I saw Hour of the Wolf, and Hour of the Wolf is one of my favorite movies of my whole life. And I still... I don't think I've ever gone back and watched The Seventh Seal again, though. I was just kind of left it there. And I think every time I watch The Hour of the Wolf, I like it more.
It gets creepier, I find. It gets creepier to me.
Really?
The ending is so off-putting. When... Anyhow.
How it just ends?
Well, I mean, just the whole lead-up as far as, like, the commentary on masculinity and the whole, like, what this guy's... kind of morphed himself into in light of this family that's, I don't know, something about this weird...
But are any of them there? Like, is it really happening?
Or has
she just gotten completely into his delusion?
I mean, that's entirely possible. I never looked at it that way, honestly.
Really?
I kind of looked at it, I mean, I think I looked at it more understanding that whether or not... I never actually, you know, I thought of them as a symbol... period, more of a, you know, but I thought of them as entities.
Hmm.
Not that he was delusional necessarily, but it would explain a lot.
Yeah. Because it happens, there's when she's like trying to talk to him at the beginning and he's just like very like closed off and she says something like, I wish I could see the things that you do, or I wish I could, she says something like that. She makes this kind of like wish. And then the next scene is when she's hanging the sheets on the clothesline, and the woman appears behind her.
I need to watch it again now. Son of a gun.
I'm glad there's somebody else on the show who now can tell me to watch this movie.
Yeah.
Repeatedly, and not just demo.
I was just going to say that seems to be... That's some foreshadowing in that.
Oh, yeah.
Which itself may be
Foreshadowing.
The future episode on.
It's like the inception of podcasts. Foreshadowing.
What if now we just cut in the episode that we do on foreshadowing? Oh,
man, that'd be so hacky, like that
movie. I know.
We just never finish our lists for this.
Sir, what's your number four?
So my number four is, I'm going to go with Unsolved Mysteries. And like, and it's in a weird way too, because like when I was a kid, my parent, when every time my parents would watch the show, I would like, I get really scared. Like the music scared me. You know, in the 90s, like if you were a kid back then, you were pretty much told that you were at risk of getting kidnapped at every moment of the day from anywhere. But like, especially if you watched Unsolved Mysteries, you were either going to get kidnapped by a serial killer or an alien. And like, there was no way to avoid it. So it just was a scary show. And like, it's funny because now I'll turn it on like to go to sleep. And it's because, and it's this weird thing where now it like, it's like, it's comforting and it's nostalgia and familiarity. Like hearing the music, Robert Stack's scary voice is now like, you know, it's this weird familiar thing that helps me relax. So, <It's weird. laughs> yeah, Unsolved Mysteries. It's strange. Nick, what's your number four?
My number four is the movie Carol. And this is something where, and it's a beautiful movie. The soundtrack to it is amazing. A guy called Carter Burwell does the score. And the entire movie, it's like a romance, and you're trying to figure out what's going to happen with these characters, and will they get together, and will they stay together? But this is a movie where my appreciation for it has increased so much because our friend Ashley is obsessed with it. Obsessed with it. So I've talked about this movie so much with Ashley that it's just like increased how much I love the movie too. The year it came out, I think it was 2015 or 16. I remember I had it as my number three movie of that year behind Ex Machina and Phoenix. And I think now if I were to go back and remake that list, it would probably be my number one. It's the movie of those three that I've rewatched the most. And it's a little bit more like the complete package, I think. Those other movies still rule, but I think Carol has probably eclipsed them a little bit.
Yeah. I haven't seen Phoenix, but as far as Ex Machina, I would say that Carol edges it out.
Yeah. Phoenix, the end of that movie is something else. Kyle, what's your number three?
My number three is a tie between Minecraft and Terraria. Mm-hmm. Two games. Minecraft might be my favorite game of all time. Games are pretty similar. But Minecraft I just bought for the third time on the Switch, and it's been years since I've played it, and booting it up, there are just so many new things to check out now. Like, there are turtles, and there's a panda bear in it, and I was like, what is going on? Because when I first played the game, I think it was not even released yet. It was, like, in beta. I think it was like 2011 maybe, and there was barely anything in it, and I still had a lot of fun, but now there's just so many different mechanics and systems and items, and it's the same thing with Terraria, which I don't have as much time into it, but I do know that they're still like adding stuff and making the game better, and it's all free too, all these updates, so I think that's cool that a game that's this old is still being played by millions of people still. So
yeah, those games, like, especially Terraria, made me realize, really helped me, like, break down what was fun about 2D gaming, too. Mm-hmm. Like, 2D gaming in general. Like, yeah. Seeing this, like, really powerful kind of 2D game with, like you said, a deep system and
yeah,
all these updates. It's like, oh, yeah, this is what was fun
and
about it.
And it can be just casual if you want to just build stuff, but then it can also be scary and, like, when you're going down in the caves and stuff.
Yeah.
That's cool. Yeah. That one be your number three.
Far Cry 5. I think our like within the last like four episodes, I was bashing the ending, and I've made a 180.
Would you like play it again, or I just thought about it?
I just needed to ruminate on it. It was a very spoilers if you haven't played it yet.
Did you pick it up, sir?
I bought it Yeah, I did buy it, and I haven't played it yet because I've been Shadow of War, man. Just
or Pokemon. About it, honestly?
No, it's cool. I already know what happens, and I do remember you were like really like against it last episode.
Totally, because and I think getting away from it, there's a lot of explicit references to Trump and how this is like this cult. It's about a cult.
Mm-hmm.
But there's a lot of Trump references and also this cult mentality and this like family that controls everything. And the ending is that you lose, essentially. You play the game, you get to the bad guy, you defeat the bad guy in combat, but you still lose.
Mm-hmm.
And it time away from it, the reason it was so upsetting to me was that, honest to God, I had the same visceral reaction because it brought me back to like election night in November
2016. 2008.
No,
never mind. kidding, folks.
But it's that same sense of like. So very daring. And not like it's certainly not fulfilling in the way that most video games are, but it is one of the best arguments for video games as art that I've ever experienced.
Wow.
Well, yeah. I like that whole feeling of you worked really hard to get something. You know, we felt like, okay, let's all get involved in this, and that'll keep it from happening. And it's the same as a playthrough on a game that you've invested, you know, 40, 50 hours into this thing. And
all this effort so that the bad guy wins.
Mm.
And it's like, you defeated him. We've got the popular vote.
Right.
Yeah.
We still lost.
Yeah.
Like yeah, just to be clear, listeners, like, right. Like,
he did lose.
Eva, your number three?
My number three is Thin Lizzy, which I had a similar, like, oh, this is dumb. You know, I'm tired of hearing Boys Are Back in Town on the radio. But the more I got into like non-radio singles, Thin Lizzy, it's great. If you like, you know, 1970s rock and roll music, give like the first handful of Thin Lizzy albums a try, because you're going to be like very, very happily surprised by that it's not what you think it is.
Hmm. Mm. Adding it.
You're welcome.
Strong. I'm going to go with Keanu Reeves, actually. And because, like, it's just hit me how we thought about him in the culture, like during the Speed era. Like, even, like, talking about movies and stuff back in the day, like, we used to make fun of Keanu Reeves a lot. Like, you know, the whole Paul Walker clone thing, you remember that? How we just figured Paul Walker was a clone of Keanu Reeves, and, you know.
I think we used to do a bit where it was, like, Keanu and Paul Walker, like, yes. Hey, I'm Keanu.
Yeah. Now I'm Paul Walker.
Hey, man.
It just the idea of him, everything about him's changed in our perception of him in the culture, and it's, you know, so he's strange. Become this like this icon of progressivism and, you know, like kind of restrained celebrity, and even his performances, like, I think they've improved, and like
I bet if you Google woke him, king Keanu will be the first thing that comes up. I'm gonna do it right now. I'm pretty curious.
It's probably going to be Keanu, for sure. And just even, like, as an actor, people have a lot more respect for him. Like, the way people talk about his role as Neo is a lot different than it was when it first came out.
Did you watch any of the E3 coverage or anything?
I didn't, actually.
Because the thing that stole, like, the entire week was just him being in Cyberpunk. And it's like, when did he turn into this guy that you get excited about makes an appearance in a video game?
Yeah.
Like, it's strange.
Yeah, it really is.
I was wrong about that, Google, for the record.
Who was that?
I don't know. It's a bunch of stuff that I didn't feel like really.
I think part of it is the sad Keanu meme. I think that's the turning point, because
you might be right.
Like,
it humanized him.
Yeah, it humanized him. And also, he had a sense of humor about it. He wasn't, you know, like,
yeah, he just seems cool.
Yeah,
yeah, he wasn't like Mark Wahlberg's reaction to like being memed on SNL,
or Mark Wahlberg's reaction to black school children, or black school children playing in the
to Vietnamese people being unbeaten.
So yeah, well, he walked past a school and saw some black children playing in New York, threw rocks at them. He attacked a Vietnamese man as a kid, as a youth, around that same time.
This is all pre-Funky Bunch days.
Yeah, so, you know, as long as it's three, he's cool now.
Yeah. After we, as a community, decided good vibrations enough.
That, yeah, that,
he won us back
for it, right? Yeah, except no.
How bad is it when like Transformers isn't the worst thing you've done?
Nick, what? I tried to get past it. I tried to just roll past it. I couldn't.
That's true.
I had to let it hit for a minute. Yeah.
That's true. I'm gonna go with the music one too. I had this as my number one, but since Steve just brought up a music one, I'm gonna go with Jason Isbell, who's a country singer, I guess. Is he country?
Yeah, he's country.
Yeah, he's a little bit country.
Because I keep trying to say it's not really he's country, it's southern soul. Rock. Yeah.
No, it's country.
Because Nelly's like, why are you listening to this country music? I don't like it. I'm like, well, it's not country music, it's just a guy with his guitar singing sad songs. Oh God, I like country music. Like that's all it is, right?
If we were vampires, you heard If We Were Vampires.
Maybe is that one of his songs?
Yeah, that's a song. I thought you were.
I know. I was gonna say that's an awesome point you're about to make.
Which album is it from? Because I don't know a lot of the album titles.
It's one of the. I think it's the most recent one. Jason Isbell and the 400 Unit.
Oh yeah. I've listened to that, but not as much as Southeastern. I've listened to like every day for the past like four.
How many songs about tractors does he have?
Zero.
That's cool.
He's not that kind of country music.
Yeah, he's not that kind of country music. He's really good. He's a great lyricist. Mm-hmm. Like one of the best working lyricists.
That's why I don't like country music.
Yeah, the songs about tractors.
The Drive By Truckers albums that he's on are really great too.
Yeah, but Nelly would complain and be like, I don't like this. But I would play Southeastern and I would hear like humming along to the songs too. So he's just really good. But how he fits into this trope is. He would always come up in conversation as something that a lot of people whose opinions I respect would like. And I'd listen to him. I'd try it. I'd be like, it's a little... It's not bad. I just don't like it. And I did that like three or four times. And the last time I did it, something just clicked. And I'm like, this is freaking incredible. It's the same... Like, I would give it a shot every 6 months and it never really worked for a few years. And finally it did. I do the same thing every year or so with eggnog. And I still don't like eggnog, but maybe someday I'll love it.
I'm going to make you some this Christmas.
It'll be the Jason Isbell of eggnogs.
It's Coquito. It's not exactly eggnog.
That's not the same, though.
It's close enough.
It is close enough.
It's pretty close. However, I think that the coconut flavors, that's what makes it different.
Maybe the like Hispanic flair to it. Will.
Dude, I sold a lot at the nightlight when I made it, Lara. A year or so ago.
Legally,
yes. That was...
You didn't brew it in your bathtub and like...
It's like all across the Caribbean, every... Like, Haiti has it, Dominican Republic has it.
I remember you asked me about it maybe a couple years ago, and I was like, I don't know. I asked Nelly, and she's like, oh yeah, it's like this thing. I'm like,
okay. Like every one of them has it. It's very slightly different variation. It's basically coconut eggnog.
Oh. That sounds amazing.
Oh, it is. It's like if you make it thick enough, you could use it as a topping. You can like do all kinds of stuff with it. It's really
yum.
Kyle, what's your number two?
It's not my number two, but mushrooms would be something that got better.
Do you mean mushrooms like
I was gonna say the edible mushroom, but
psilocybin. What are you talking about, Kyle?
Like portobellos?
Yeah. Shiitake. I don't feel at home in this world anymore. It was a late addition to my list because I feel like I didn't really get or I thought it was fine, the movie, but I think I watched it a couple times in a row because we reviewed it.
Yeah.
Okay. Maybe that's why. And then, it just got better with each time I watched it, but it's still a weird movie that this happens a lot with movies where I can't pick up on the tone of it sometimes, where it's like, am I supposed to be laughing at this part? Mm-hmm. And that's definitely the case with this movie. There's a lot of really messed up things, because it's by the same person that did Green Room? Or no?
It's, no, it's by the actor who collaborates with that guy a lot. So he was the main character in a movie called Blue Ruin.
I love Blue Ruin.
Which is another one of those movies where the tone, like, there are some things that happen that are, like, almost funny.
Yeah.
But they're not, because they're just a little too much.
Yeah, I didn't realize that that movie was... It's directed by the guy who was in Blue Ruin?
It's directed by the main character of Blue Ruin.
Is he in the movie, too?
He's the guy who talks to the main character in the bar and, like, spoils
check
the
this book out.
He's reading or something like that.
Oh.
It's a weird... movie.
Forgot about that scene.
What's his name is great in it, though?
Elijah Wood.
Yeah. He's gotten better with age.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Him and Robert Pattinson.
Well, Elijah kind of peaked in North, if we're going to be honest. Yeah.
After Radio Flyer, it's just downhill.
Thamel, what would be your
Bruce
number
Willis
two?
Bruce Willis is best.
You're talking about North still?
Yeah. And Dan Aykroyd's best. That movie's full of it.
Oh.
What's worse, Transformers or The Happening?
Or North.
I never saw that.
The Happening. Oh, The Happening's way, like, unequivocally far
but,
worse.
But is it worse in a, like, a good way? Like, no. Like in an MST3K way?
I don't know, man. I've seen that movie a number of times, and that number is higher than I care
George
to admit.
George Costanza, Jason Alexander's in it.
In North?
Yeah.
In North. He's the dad. And he's the dad's, like, weird clone guy.
Everybody's in North.
Why do I?
None of them will admit it.
Is it really bad? I don't remember it at all.
It's horrible.
I wonder how many.
Richard Belzer is in it.
It's all right. I thought she was in it, and then you said Jason Alexander, and I was like, maybe I got the wrong Seinfeld cast member. But Julia Louis-Dreyfus is also in it.
Is it his mom?
I don't.
She's another one of the moms. I
don't remember, but. What a crazy.
So racist.
What a
it's
crazy.
It's so racist.
Is it really?
Oh, yeah.
In this movie. Not only did it have the two of them, they're of like a dozen other cast members. That was right in the middle of Seinfeld.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Like, that was peak Seinfeld.
I feel like a lot of the actors in it were doing well. Like, even Dan Aykroyd at that time was kind of making, I guess, would have been like almost after. A comeback. Like,
not
a little
too
bit
far
of a.
After
Scarlett Johansson is in it?
Jesus Christ.
When he was nine?
Richard Belzer?
We need to review this movie.
No. No.
Man, that's one that would be that'd be a rough. Be
14% on Rotten Tomatoes.
Those are the best kind of reviews.
Ebert's review of this movie is an all-time classic. Maybe his most classic review ever.
What is it?
I hated this movie. Hated this movie. Hated it. Every simpering, stupid, vacant, audience-insulting moment of it.
Wow.
Hated the sensibility that thought anyone would like it. Hated the implied insult to the audience by its belief that anyone would be entertained by it.
Wow.
That's how he opens the review.
Nice.
This is the first paragraph of the review.
Coming from the man who wrote Beyond the Valley of the Dolls.
Yeah. Anyways, North gets better with age. Is that where we...
Coming from the man that liked Crash.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Did he like Crash?
He named it his best movie of the year.
Wow.
Huh. Is that more famous than his Good Burger? Didn't he like really love Good Burger too?
Yeah, but Good Burger.
He's not wrong about that.
No, but it's just like it seems so funny that he even reviews movies like Good Burger.
Yeah. And that's why like a movie like North had a chance with him. Yeah. It could have, you know, it could have been good.
Huh. I have no idea where we're at.
Yeah, you are too.
Dark Knight Returns. Mm. When I read this when I was much younger, it was just Batman being tough and breaking bones and being like this archetypal, like, the what we think of when we think of, like, oh, this is a dark Batman. And then as I grew older and reread it, I'm like, oh, this guy has a death wish. This guy has a hero complex. He's on a mission and has lost track of reality.
Wait, are you talking about Frank Miller?
Yeah, right. Right? Honest to God.
But I was going to say, it's the kind of thing where... You wonder if the guy who wrote it even gets...
It's absolutely true, though.
Gets all that?
Yeah. Well, that's
or how much he understands that it's not good to be?
Well, the thing is, I thought that he had insight into it until I heard about Holy Terror.
Yeah.
Which is this racist, Islamophobic comic that he wanted to make Batman versus Al-Qaeda after 9/11.
DC was like, no.
And DC was like, no. So now it's like some weird guy who looks a little bit like Batman... Yeah. Just being terrible. I mean, it's it's a terrible premise. I was talking to this comic shop owner who says that he's had multiple people bring it back and say, I don't care if you can reimburse me or not. I don't want this in my home.
Wow.
Yeah. So
I think, well, Dark Knight, though, is it's almost like 1984 to me. In that it's more, that graphic novel feels more relevant.
With this mentality of, I mean, again, I not to go back to
it, Batman is a proud toxic, boy.
Well, say again.
I said Batman is a proud boy.
Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, in a way, like this kind of toxic, toxic masculinity of in this like violence.
Mm-hmm. The sons of Batman definitely are
milkshake Batman. Is what we're saying.
Sons of Batman are definitely the proud boys, right? Mm-hmm. Or incels, a little bit of a combination of both.
That word. I should say that non-word. I cannot, and I appreciate the chance to say it here publicly. So glad you said it. That is not a word that exists. Let's just call them what they used to be called: rapists or would-be rapists.
Yeah,
I get it though. That it's a quick identifier to what has become I can't really call it a community.
But I think the subculture. Connotation for that is now like alt-right. You can say alt-right and be like, let's call them what they really are. But if you say alt-right, everyone knows what you mean.
Yeah.
Anyhow. Well, I didn't mean to bring it down.
Any Frank Miller reference.
Yeah. Frank Miller is going to lead to talking about rape one way or the other.
Yeah. You're number two.
Well, I'm going to get ahead of our soup talk for the week, and I'm going to say...
what kind of soup?
I'm going to say chili gets better with time.
Chili itself, or like you've appreciated it more with time?
Chili itself, anytime.
Letting it sit for a day.
Cool it down, or any braise of any kind. You let it cool all the way down, and then heat it back up.
Yeah.
Mm. Yeah. Sorry. I think if you make salsa at home, it also... I don't know if it's something that's like tomato-based, maybe... but salsa is the same way.
It's kind of like, the more you think about it, not to get all like Alton Brownie about it, but
you think about an Alton Brownie.
It's wearing glasses. It keeps wanting to talk about gluten strains.
You're on today.
I know.
It's because it's his topic.
It's like my time to shine.
You kind of think of like the magic of a liquid water, you know, usually, like taking on the flavors of the other things that are in it. And all it is like heat and time.
Yeah.
Well, this big thing with letting things like hang out with each other and get to know each other. Mm-hmm. Flavors. So, just have them sit overnight.
Yep. Sir, what's your number two?
I'm going to go with beef stew on this.
Nice.
Because I feel like even no matter what kind of broth it is, and like I'm a big fan of like a thin broth right now. Because like...
I've just been, like Kyle I've been said, sipping a lot of thin broth.
Yeah. It's like, you know, it just gets a little time to flavors get together. And I've also found that like of all the like cold soups, a thin beef stew is the best the next day. Cold you just try it. It's like almost like, you know what it reminds me of? Antipasto salad. And not like the like fake that you get from like a cheap pizza shop that still has like pepperoncinis. No, I mean like the cheese, different kinds of like, you know, pork that it meats that I don't eat anymore, and then like vegetables, like a traditional like antipasto. It kind of reminds me of that, and then it's just all these ingredients together that you're just like, it's cold, it's refreshing. The broth's like, you know, you can sip it. It's a refreshing summer drink. And just, you know.
Deep drink?
Yeah, just gets you set up for the day. Yeah. Thin beef stew.
Not quite sure how to transition into my number two, but have any of you seen the 2.5-hour Hungarian movie called The Turin Horse?
No. Missed that one.
Nothing happens in it. It's 2.5 hours of...
Sounds
just
like your kind of movie.
Stark, super contrasty, dark black and white, the wind blowing super loud in these people in this post-apocalyptic like shack. And I think some people come by and try to drink out of their well, and the horse doesn't want to walk around. And it sounds like I'm being overly reductive, That's pretty much
yeah,
it.
Yeah, don't watch Bergman's Sour the Wolf, but yeah.
Yeah.
Let's watch the horse be stubborn
that's,
for 3.5 hours.
That's pretty much it. Somebody comes by and I think they like share a drink together. That's pretty much the movie.
And you
wait, are you recommending this film?
You love it.
Well, when I was watching it, I'm like,
I could go for some beef stew right now.
It's a little
not too thick though.
It's a little slow. But the mood of it is really good. But it's pretty slow. But after I watched it, I'm like, you know, that movie did kind of rule. Because it's unlike any movie I've seen before. It's just, there's something about it that's just dark and depressing. And it makes you feel like wretched, and it's hard for a movie to do that while also doing so little plot wise.
Did you see November?
No, the month of the year.
Yes, the whole month. Did you see the month? Just like walking by.
Most of it. I sleep a few hours a day, so I haven't. Yeah.
No, it was a. I think it was Estonian horror film.
Oh, I think you told me about that, but no, I haven't seen
it. I think I did. Yeah, that I had the same feeling from that of like this. Like, God, this is weird. Nothing's happening, but. Very much like Hour of the Wolf. And when I tried to like explain it to somebody plot-wise what's happening in it, it's real weird. Like, it's a town where the ancestors come back from the dead at a certain period of time, and you have to like set a table for them, and then they go into the sauna and they turn into chickens.
Mm.
There's like this kind of creature that lives in the village that people like bring to life, and it enacts revenge on other people for you, and it's this weird like
sounds so familiar. I may have seen it, but
I think it's been like in the last like 2 years maybe that it came out. It's on Shudder right now.
Oh, I need to get Shudder.
Yeah
it's worth it.
Yeah, I wasn't sure if Shudder would be worth it, and then like Deadbeat at Dawn, they released that on Shudder. They released the entire Pusher trilogy. Reference original, like the stuff that is either horror that you never heard of, or like maybe didn't get a chance to see because it's foreign or something like that, or like the not almost non-horror stuff that they put on is really exciting.
That's cool.
Let me just read a little bit. This is from A.O. Scott, who's the New York Times, one of the New York Times film critics. This is his review of The Turin Horse, or from his review. The rigors of life can grind you down. The rigor of art can have the opposite effect. And The Turin Horse is an example, an exceedingly rare one in contemporary cinema, of how a work that seems built on the denial of pleasure can, through formal principle, passionate integrity, and terrifying seriousness, produce an experience of exaltation. The movie is too beautiful to be described as an ordeal, but it is sufficiently intense and unyielding that when it is over, you may feel, along with awe, a measure of relief. What may sound like a reason to stay away, but is exactly the opposite. That's kind of how... he's a good writer. He knows what he's talking about. It's just a dreadful movie in the literal sense that it just fills you with dread, but in, I think, a compelling way. I would recommend it if you have a couple hours and a half hour to kill watching, I don't know, The Wind.
I guess this is a callback to my Christian upbringing. However, I mean, the word dread didn't always mean like something completely awful. Like, you have dread of, like, there's dread of the Lord your God, for example, they would say. Like, you have dread and awe. Mm. So I wonder if, yeah.
Maybe. It's
that feeling of almost, like, respect for the power of the film.
Yeah. It's...
To bring that kind of feeling.
It's a bleak one. Anyways. I think they might eat soup in it.
There goes the comparison. Or
yeah.
The tie-in.
Yeah. Kyle, what's your number one?
My number one is Detroit Become Human, a David Cage game about making some really tough decisions. And you play three different androids. And what's unique about this game, and it's a lot of his games are like this, where your playthrough will be completely different from someone else's. So when you finish playing it, you have a good time. But it gets better when you start sharing stories of how... your friends and how their stories went. I was talking to Andy last night about it, and one of his characters went out, like, it was nothing like I ever saw, and it sounded really dark and messed up, and I like hearing where the game can go, because there are just so many different storylines and outcomes, and he does it really well. David Cage does in this, and in what was the other one? The I forget. He all of his games have branching storylines, though. But yeah, that's my number one. Thymo, what would be your number one?
I have Bob Dylan recordings. I tried listening to them when I was younger, like in high school. And then I returned to them, and it just didn't speak to me. I was like, who is this guy? Got a band, which is funny because it's a band.
Called The Band.
Yeah. as I was saying that sentence, I realized, like, not only does he have a band.
It is the band.
It is the band. But during, like, the George W. Bush era, his stuff then really spoke to me. I haven't done, like, a deep dive. I'm not a big Bob Dylan guy. But it was weird because it was just like a couple years difference, but there was like a big switch to me. So, Bob Dylan, my number one. Eva?
Bob Dylan was something I thought I had to like to get people to like take me seriously for some reason. And that was something I was glad to shake off as I got older, but I don't really need to. Bob Dylan was really influenced in like his cultivation of his Bob Dylan character by Gorgeous George.
Really?
Yes.
The boxer from the movie Snatch?
No.
The old timey.
Yes.
The original heel.
The original heel. So my number one is Rocky movies in general, and most specifically Rocky IV. And people who think that Rocky IV is like the silliest, you know, like jingoistic, pandering kind of sequel are really missing the point of a lot of it.
Which one is for?
Russia.
Okay. That's what I was thinking.
There's a lot of layers to it that I think that people don't appreciate. And even then, even if you still think that Rocky IV is stupid, if there were no Rocky IV, there would be no Creed movie. So everybody loves Creed and Creed 2. You're going to have to acknowledge.
You have to deal with it.
You have to deal with the fact that Rocky IV is the reason that we have Creed. I think they're wonderful. It's easily my favorite. And if you think Rocky IV is the worst sequel, you've obviously never seen Rocky V. So what's your number one?
Well, I think if you don't like Rocky IV, especially for some of the reasons people like say, then it's like, how do you like any of the other movies in the series? Like, other than Rocky, like, one. I mean, Rocky I is so much different from the rest of them. Yet all the sequels are, and it's much better than Rocky II.
I stopped at 3. Do you guys feel I need to go?
Yeah. You've got to check out 4, yeah. Yeah. You don't have to watch 5.
Okay. That's
never watched. I stopped after 2. And then I've seen Creed.
I haven't seen Creed or Creed 2.
Creed rules. I haven't seen Creed 2 yet.
Is it really just called Creed 2?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. It's basically a remake of Rocky 2. Except in a way that's like the same thing that Rocky... One, like, it's the same style of sequel. Like, everything, like, it repeats. It's just really interesting. And yet, that's not an indictment. Like, it's a good movie. It's fun. So my number one is The Warriors, directed by Walter Hill. I just watched it the other day with my daughter, because she's been working on this comic book that is set in 1979, and the main character is, like, this young black guy that lives in Oakland, and the other main character is this Vietnamese girl that's like part of the, do you remember the Vietnamese boat people? This is what they called them. I use that term to call to mind the international event that called it that. However, I mean, they were refugees. And so she was like, yeah, you know, I'm trying to like do some research on that. And I was like, she's like, there's like a lot of 70s gangs in it and stuff. And I was like, well, yeah, I was like, yeah.
And she had never seen?
She'd never seen The Warriors. And, so I just watched it like probably 2 or 3 weeks ago. And it hit me that as much as the movie is really respected and loved and, you know, had a great video game, great resurgence, all kinds of things. We talk about how it's based on a Greek novel now, which is great. As an art film, it's not really that respected. And like, it is a beautiful movie. Like there's some shots. Is it? I mean, like, I don't mean like as a people respect like the colorful nature of it the same way they respect like Style Wars and Beach Street. is this 80s kind of, like, there is art to it, not as in, like, this is, like, as a film, like, an artistic, like, film that's, like, visually kind of complex.
That intro, just the, I don't know, I guess I'm a sucker for world building, because that whole intro with, like, all the gangs coming, and then Cyrus in front of, you know.
There's a shot in it where it's right after Swan and Mercy have this, like, fight in the subway, and he's walking through the subway by himself. And you see the lights from some, like, it almost, you imagine it's like a club because they're colored lights. And, like, the lights are shining into, like, the subway corridor as he's walking. And you just see, like, Swan in this wide shot walking all the way across the frame. And he's just encased in, like, red and green and yellow. And, like, and it's just so symbolic, too, because he can't get to that actual world. It's shining into the subway corridor. Like, it's a very artistic film. And the final shot of the film, I mean, it's just, it's really, I think it's great. I think it's a lot better than, for, you know, and I acknowledge that, like, it does get respect. I just think there are certain things that people still see, and it's kind of like a comic book movie.
Yeah, I think it's maybe one of the movies where if you bring it up, people will go, oh yeah, that movie's awesome. But if you don't, it might not come up in conversation as much as it should. There's a podcast I listen to where they compare movies that are out now, like in theaters, to an older movie, classic movie, and kind of like compare and contrast how they have similar themes or how this movie may have inspired that one. And they compared John Wick 3 with The Warriors.
Oh, wow.
And I was pretty pleased at how enthusiastic they all were about
Warriors. That episode. Nick, what is your number one?
My number one, I'm going with a comedy. It's the movie Blazing Saddles, which is a movie where the first time I saw it, I was a kid, and I hadn't really seen any Westerns. And then, you know, I'll watch it every few years, and I'll have seen more Westerns. And just as you get older, you understand those tropes more, those jokes more. It does a really good job of pointing out how racist all of those people in those movies were. And it's something that you don't really appreciate, I think, when, like, the first time you see it as a kid, but then, you know, after having seen things like The Searchers, and you see how terrible that character is, it makes the way that Mel Brooks attacks it a lot funnier. And then it's just such a quotable movie. I mean, one of my favorite things is
I was just gonna say I probably say that like every month.
I mean, that's the best. And then Madeline Kahn in this movie, she was nominated for an Oscar for this movie.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow.
Like,
she's so funny.
I don't think that type of role would get nominated now. But I don't know who won that year, but she should have. Like, how did she? She's so unbelievably funny in that movie. Yeah, that's. I mean, it's one of my favorite comedies of all time. I love that movie, and it was something where the first time I saw it, and maybe even the first couple times I saw it, I would, you know, it's. I think I like Spaceballs and Young Frankenstein more, but now, like, this is his masterpiece, I think.
I had a doctor, and it was about like 10 years ago, who I'd seen him to like refill a prescription and like adjust something, and he also wrote on a tongue depressor for me that I had to rent High Anxiety. And he's like, I think this will help. And I don't think that was anything that he was observing in me. However, I think that was more him, that he was like trying to tell me something about him or what he was going through. But
when you start writing like comedy wrecks on medical equipment, like that's high anxiety. Funny. That's a deep cut too.
Yeah.
All right, so those are our top five things that got better with age. We've got some feedback. This is from we haven't done feedback in a minute because this is an old email, but this is from Wednesday. She says, "Dear On the Tropes, I just had to write and tell you how much I love your show. One of the many anxieties is that one day On the Tropes might end. Will never happen.
Aww.
Will never happen until like we're all dead.
Even after the apocalypse, will
because of her fault."
We'll be hoarding oil just to keep the show going and electricity.
Steam power. Oh yeah, diesel powered podcast station. Love it.
And she continues, your podcast is just so great, and I wanted to let you know how much I enjoy it. You might not remember me, but I once wrote an iTunes review for you where I mistakenly assumed that you were a bunch of white guys. We do remember that.
Yep.
Yeah.
You guys laughed about my assumption on air. It's ironic because I'm a black woman who talks proper, so my voice gets mistaken for white all the time. Anyway, keep up the good work.
Didn't we hear this email already?
I don't think so. Mm-hmm. I think we might
have talked about it.
Yeah,
I think we talked about it on Facebook Messenger or something.
Okay. So thank you.
That's one of our favorite moments on the show when that happened. Yeah.
We have a new follower on Podomatic. If people do use Podomatic, they can follow us. So Roy Smith is a new follower. If you're,
you're gonna give a shout out.
You're giving a shout out.
Roy's a friend of mine from work.
Oh, really?
I've known him a long time. Yeah.
It's funny how people can follow you on Podomatic because it's like he has to create an account on Podomatic just to follow us, when you could easily just get iTunes or something.
Yeah. Well, we appreciate
that's it. That's how much he likes
you.
Yeah,
it's awesome.
Yeah, right on.
We've had more iTunes ratings, like not accompanied with reviews because you can just do the star rating, but we've had a bunch more of those lately, which we do appreciate. If you haven't, rate and review us over on iTunes or wherever else it is. If it's not on iTunes, like, we don't see it as often, so hit us up.
I mean, in podcasting analytics and listeners, an iTunes review is like the best thing you could do for us.
And just from a morale perspective, it's nice to know that we're not just like talking into the
void.
Actually, the best thing you could do is tag your local water cooler, like your water tower, with the listen to this, with the URL to our like iTunes feed or something like that.
Definitely,
it's going to be like a complicated tag.
You probably have to do like laps around them.
I think the review might be.
Yeah, so maybe
might be more helpful. We've got some feedback. We've got a bunch of top five lists from various listeners. So this week we're going to cover... This is Paul in the UK. He says, hi, OTT gang. Loving the show as always. And here's my suggestions for the last couple topics. Like I said, these are a little old. That you've talked about. He's having a human child.
I was
going
to say, congratulations.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, he's having a human baby. Child.
Is that presumptive to assume that it's human? Could it be?
Well, his partner is casting.
Yeah. Was that a discussion off the air?
On the air?
I think it was off the air. People have no idea what we're talking about. Cringe comedy. He mentions The Thick of It. Anything that involves Hugh Abbott and Malcolm Tucker. The whole premise of I Think You Should Leave with Tim Robinson, but the Loaded Nachos sketch is hilariously cringy. That's one of the best sketches from that show.
I'll
let you discover it on your own, but we ate nachos at a bar yesterday, and we just made that joke. Like, the joke from that bit the whole time to each other. Father Ted, are you all right there, Ted? Is so funny and yet so cringy in terms of comedy and race. I don't know what Father Ted is.
Mm-hmm. British stuff.
The whole premise of the comedy, The Increasingly Poor Decisions of Todd Margaret, which is a David Cross.
Yeah.
Like, was it a web series?
Or no, I just knew about it through Netflix.
Okay. And It's Always Sunny in Philadelphia. His best of 99. It's a sixer.
Hmm.
Oh, no, never mind. I misread. It's only a fiver. He doesn't have them in order, but Being John Malkovich, Fight Club, Office Space, Bowfinger in The Matrix, and TV shows, Futurama, Home Movies, Spaced, The League of Gentlemen, and Ed, and Eddie. I do love Spaced.
Yeah.
Music, Red Hot Chili Peppers, Scar Tissue, Santana, Smooth. I almost started singing that today because I did say it was a hot one.
And now you'll never stop.
Mm-hmm.
But I couldn't remember the line after that. I know that had something to do with the sun.
In the midday,
yeah. So I didn't make the show.
It's like Rob Thomas is in the studio.
Is he here?
I
heard him.
It was me.
Aphex Twin Window Licker. Jamiroquai Canned Heat.
Oh wow, Jamiroquai.
And Baz Luhrmann, Everybody's Free. Baz Luhrmann, my filmic nemesis?
I was going to say, your favorite.
They're talking about the one that's on like the Romeo and Juliet soundtrack?
I don't know.
I don't know if that... I think so. But I didn't know. I didn't really realize that was Baz Luhrmann as the artist.
I get him and Uwe Boll confused.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Wow.
Signature style, film, Tarantino's focusing on actresses' feet, Spielberg's daddy issues, Wes Anderson's characters wearing very distinctive costumes, Kevin Smith's discussion of geeky topics, and Spike Lee's talk about race and race relations. Music, They Might Be Giants' love of accordion, Linkin Park's rapping and sing-screaming, Beatles songs with George Harrison's focus on spirituality, Tom Waits' voice alone, and David Gilmour's talking guitar, and then anti-villain, film, Tuco,
so I guess, is that TV?
Tuco? No, live action. Tuco, Benedicto, Pacifico, Juan Maria Ramirez, The Good, the Bad, and the Ugly. I was just having trouble going from Tuco to Benedicto because I started thinking about General Zod from Man of Steel. He says, shoddy movie, but great portrayal from Shannon, which I agree. Yeah. Michael Shannon. Williams defense Foster from Falling Down. William Ford from 12 Years a Slave. And Magneto from the X-Men series. TV show, Jesse from Breaking Bad. D'Angelo Barksdale from The Wire. Lieutenant John Cavanaugh from The Shield. Frank Sabatka from The Wire. And Lindsay Denton from Line of Duty. Western animation, he went all out. Mr. Freeze from Batman TAS. Wile E. Coyote. Wile E. Coyote's a great one. He just wants to eat. Like, he's starving in the desert. He's an emaciated coyote.
He is emaciated.
Yeah. The Brain from Pinky and the Brain. Satan from the Bible. No, South Park. And Tom from Tom and Jerry. I guess he wanted to eat, but he was like a domestic house cat. I'm sure he got food. Anyway. Monster of the Week, Western Animation, Batman TAS, Courage the Cowardly Dog, Captain Planet, Chip and Dale, and Archer. And live action TV, Star Wars, Star Trek, Original Series, X-Files, Doctor Who, Red Dwarf, and he wrote Doctor Who again. I think because he loves Doctor Who so much.
Yeah, maybe like multiple series. I mean, Red Dwarf is a... I appreciate that shout out because I had a Red Dwarf era.
I've never watched Red Dwarf.
It's hard. Worth it.
Yeah, it is.
I love that show.
It is worth recommending. It's just hard to. I almost feel like it's hard to navigate what to watch because they had that weird reboot. Don't watch that. Yeah,
you can't just jump in. Like it's definitely like a binge.
It's almost like a thing. Yeah, either watch the first like three or four seasons or jump into like season two or something.
I would say it's hard to figure out where. But definitely watch through season 5. I seem to remember season 5 had a lot of like really smart plots. Mm-hmm. Like they were trying themselves. Like the judge would take them on their own like avatar. I don't know. It's been a long time.
Yeah. Yeah. That's kind of where I'm at with it.
Well, if you people out there also have top fives that you want to share with us or anything else you want to share with us, you can do so at onthetropes@gmail.com or facebook.com/onthetropes. Twitter.com/onthetropes, or you can buy our stuff, buy some loot at redbubble.com/people/onthetropes. Anyway, I'm Nick.
I'm Sir.
Eva.
Demo.
And Kyle.
Next week. I'm trying to think of a... Oh, we're not even doing foreshadowing next week. We're doing Evil Plan. Anyways, well, that foreshadowing joke...
Yeah, that just tank.
Going out the window either way. All right, bye.